It's hobby time again. Carlos, when he started his jewelry making, that he had more sight than what he has now. So he had to figure out some things as he got into this and he's lost more vision. So listen to how this gentleman does his jewelry because he's quite the artist. So Carlos, take it over.
Hello everybody. My name is Carlos Sanchez. I am calling in from New Mexico. I have been an artist all my life. I had some trouble when I started to realize that I couldn't see the way I used to and my vision was starting to deteriorate and to change. With retinitis pigmentosa, anything is, you know, possible. My vision fluctuates throughout the day. It never stays the same. It always changes with constant lighting and different situations in different areas. So being a visually impaired artist, I had to adapt to new learning and new situations. So in my home, I have several areas where I do different projects. So I break down my areas into different layout areas. I have my workout bench, my jeweler's bench. I have a soldering area, I have a layout area, I have a prep area, and a washing station and different things because making jewelry gets, you know, you get really dirty making jewelry. The end product is beautiful. That's what, you know, when you're done with a product, you see the beauty of it with all the time and effort that you put into it. But the back end of it is, it can get really messy. But I usually work with metals. I'm a silversmith or a metal worker. I work with an acetylene torch. I am extremely low vision. I, without corrective lenses, I am 2400 in my left eye and 2200 in my right. My up close vision is not non-existent. I usually use a lot of feeling around, touching, organizing is key. When I lay out my area, my tools are to my right hand side and my acetylene torch is to my left. I am right handed and left handed, so when my right hand gets tired, I switch to my left and I start fooling around. I also do lapidary work. I cut stones. I do it all by touch. I don't use a lapidary machine. I do it all the old fashioned way. I use a hammer to break the stone, and then I fill around, and I use my limited vision to see where I can make a perfect cut, how can I finish the stone, and what shape am I going to turn this into. So I work with my hands, trying to figure out, what am I going to turn this precious stone into, what shape am I going to turn into, how am I going to finish it, all with diamond files and whatnot. So it's all about the tools and the techniques and where you lay them out and where you put them and how you can find them. So organization is key. I usually do all my finishing work with my buffing and polishing machine by touch and feel. When you learn where the power button is and you move from left to right, polish on the, you buff from the left and you polish on the right or vice versa, however you want to switch your buffing pads. But you have to find when working with equipment, you always want to make sure you're comfortable and make sure everything is working the way you feel most comfortable. I use my hands a lot and I do a lot of, like I said, I do a lot of my finishing work working with precious stones, silver. I work with silver. I work with copper. So let me mention some of the precious stones and stones that I do work with. I work with Sleeping Beauty turquoise. I work with lavender blue turquoise from Nevada. I work with Battle Mountain, which would be blue gem from Nevada, New Battle Mountain. I also have in my collection of stones Bisbee turquoise, which is almost $1,000 a carat. I've worked with I've set diamonds using unconventional items in the home, like dental floss, a piece of cardboard, and a cotton ball and a hammer. I was classically trained under the supervision of a master silver goldsmith who was visually impaired as well. He was top 23 in Santa Fe. He did a lot of he did so much in his lifetime, and he passed on to me one of the greatest gifts of learning how to silversmith. I am a fourth generation artist. My grandfather was a silversmith. His father was a silversmith. My mom was a ceramist and a gem finisher and collector. I have been blessed to be passed on some beautiful stones in my collection to add to my collection. I also do work with amethyst, which is probably one of the hardest stones I've worked with other than a diamond. Amethyst is about a 7 on the hardness scale, so to use a diamond file to finish a piece of amethyst is quite some work. You put a lot of thumb effort and a lot of elbow grease to get that stone down to the way you need it to finish. And the way I measure different things is I use a piece of paper, I use a paper clip to measure the stone, and then I proceed to the precious metal, and I mark with different tactile devices. You just have to find ways to make it work for you. So I find that measuring with a piece of paper to make a bracelet works for me. Anything that I can work with to measure is always nice. Like if I take a piece of paper that I've measured to the silver shop and say, I need a piece of metal cut this size. I show them the paper and they already know me by name. I have several accounts there and I walk in and they already know, okay, Carlos is here, so he's probably needs some metal cut. So let's see your papers and let's measure for them for you. And they send back the metal numbers and I get my metal back and I come back home and I start doing layout and whatnot. So I've had to adapt a lot with low vision, trying to get things to work for me. But with trial and error, when I first started, I would always drop things on the floor. So I learned to leave it on the floor and always try to look for it later and focus on the project at hand that you have on the bench. And when you get to the other pieces that you find on the floor, I usually turn those into other things. So that's how I develop the way I lay out things and the way I do things is I tried not to waste time because I was finding myself getting frustrated when I would drop something and I would waste my time by getting off my jeweler's bench and searching on the floor. And then I would know that like an hour or 45 minutes passed by and I could have been putting that time and effort into making and creating and finishing something else up. So that's how I developed my style, by dropping things on the floor, leaving those, picking them up later, and then turning those into something else. So you say if I was working on a pair of earrings, not every earring is going to come out exactly alike. You know, you want to get it as close as possible, but you know what I mean? But the way I was taught was your face, you know what I mean? From one side to the other is not the same. So you can't see both earrings at the same time. So, you know, it always adds character when you have it just a little off, but nobody really pays attention, but they just see the beauty once you buff and polish or finish it, because it's not how you start the product, it's how you finish the product. And being visually impaired and using your touch and feel and everything can, you know, you can make the ugliest piece of metal that's been there rusted. I know how to refinish. I know how to, I work with chemicals that can possibly, you know, take your life, but you have to be very cautious about what and how you do it and the techniques and how you set up your areas and how to be cautious about doing so. So, yes. Okay, well, I've basically given you some ideas on how I work my craft. So I will leave you with good artists work alone and great artists work together, and never be afraid to ask for help. I'm good at being a problem solver, but there's always somebody else that might show you a better trick or a better tip to further along your passion when it comes to making things at home. You know, I've been in galleries. There's permanent pieces throughout the world that I have done finishing work on. I've just been very successful in my craft, and I continue to just make beautiful things.
Carlos, do you have a website, or how would people want to order your products?
Well, the thing is I do work with a private clientele. I have worked, I've made about 500 to 700 pieces in my time, and right now it's, I can't do the work that I used to, and I have someone that helps me do my finishing work, because I've done finishing work for so many other artists, and I kind of work behind the scenes, But I do have a Facebook page. I did have to take down my website page when the gallery closed in 2019. But I had that for 5 years. But I do have a Facebook page, and I do have a Facebook group called Uniquely Blind. But Robert can give you my information, or if anybody else wants to ask me any questions, my email is going to be open, my phone is going to be open, and I can always help when and where I can. I also do a lot of donating to the Parents of Blind Children and to the NFB of New Mexico here in my affiliate. And I always give, so you can make a little something in your spare time and donate it to your affiliate. It always brings back, and you always feel good when you give back to the community. So I help anywhere I can in that aspect. So I was always taught to, it's better to give than to receive, and that's how I do my thing. I stopped taking orders a while back because my waiting list is really long.
Oh, Carlos, you have about 3 minutes left. I think I'm back unmuted, right?
Okay, well, being a crafter that works from home and being visually impaired, it is okay to ask for help. The best thing to do is ask for help when you're in a situation and you don't know how to get out of that situation. The best thing is to ask somebody more knowledgeable, or, you know what I mean, and work with somebody. Find somebody to work with. Find a buddy to work with. There's ways to still continue crafting from home now here in this pandemic, and yes.
Sir, when you have dropped things on the floor, can you explain how you can use different objects like a cane to sweep them toward your feet or to be able to find them a little easier instead of using your hands all over the floor?
Over time I realized that the flooring that I had underneath my jeweler's bench wasn't ideal. So replacing the floor and putting it a hardwood floor versus carpet, because you can lose little things in the carpet and not be able to find them when you're visually impaired. So keeping your floor area clean, or keeping a plastic mat or a box or a bucket where you're working and where things fall in, and then you can easily just reach in the bucket and get the item that fell. But there's ways to work around all that. But you know what I mean? I did waste a lot of time when I first started by getting off the bench and filling with my hands. So I learned to just grab a new piece from on top and start working from on top. Save me time, and then go back and find the other pieces. I have someone come in and help me find the pieces, and then start again with another project with another piece that had fallen on the floor previously.
So, Carlos,
you're welcome.
That was a good question, Mary. So, Carlos, I was helping my next person, you know, get his link and his computer squared away. So I missed a lot of what you had to say. But did you talk about how you do soldering?
I have to figure out a new technique because I can't see up close like I used to. So what I do is when I'm cutting solder, because I use hard solder, I don't use a soft solder because that stuff is messy. But what I do is when I lay out a project, I cut little piles and I fill to the area where I'm going to put the solder. But if you use a soldering paste and you use a toothpick, I find that using a toothpick to get the soldering paste and use it as a brush or as a cane guide on my little metal piece, I glide it around, and when you put the heat to the metal where you have your solder paste, it solidifies it, and when you put the solder next to the soldering paste, wherever you put the soldering paste, the solder will follow. So you have to be very careful, but it's all about finishing. You can always, if you make a mistake, you can always take it. Like I say, my hammer is my pencil and my file is my eraser. So you can always use the file to take off an imperfection and then buff it and polish it out, and nobody would ever know that there was a mistake there to begin with once it's finished.
That sounds pretty common sense. I'm sure 2020 would often have to do the same kind of little repair job. That's okay.
Yeah, I haven't done jewelry repair in quite some time, but my assistant helped me out with jewelry repair. But I did jewelry repair. I did jewelry repair with my vision for about 5 years. And, yeah, I've worked with a lot of, I've done work for a lot of really cool people, and I have a lot of really cool people that follow me as well, but it gets time consuming.
Okay.
Art takes time.
It does, yeah. Any kind of a skill like that. You know what they say, when it's a musical instrument, you gotta, put in like about 10,000 hours to really become, close to an expert. So, and of course, with the material that you'll get from this particular class, in your guys' hands, there will be, you know, again, the people that are here today as well as yesterday and the rest of the week, there'll be their name, and it'll be their topic, and there'll be contact information for them. And, you know, taking a look at Carlos's website would be a good thing to do. And just use him as a resource sometime in the future. So Carlos, if you want to hang around, there might be some other people at the end of this class that might want to ask you additional questions.
I plan on sticking around for a while. My day is free. I cleared the Nautilus, and I enjoyed the cane travel instruction as well. I will stick around for questions and for some talk.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing with us.